Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Thousands of years ago, humans migrated from Africa at and around the world, and they did so on foot. So the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist decided to emulate one of those journeys, starting in Ethiopia and finishing at the southern tip of Argentina. It was originally planned that the journey would only take about 7 years, but 8 years later, he's still on the road. His name is Paul Salopek, and he joins us now on Newstech. Paul, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean.
Now, first off, the particular route you chose, why did you choose to walk that route? Because I assume humans dispersed in all directions from Africa.
Sean, that's absolutely right. And that's actually something that many readers forget, because they see my route on a map and they think our ancestors walked in one direction, which is absolutely not true. They couldn't, because destinations had not been invented yet. We were out pushing from horizon to horizon, following wild animal herds, following rivers, following coastlines. And when we bumped into obstacles like glaciers or big deserts, we either turned around or pivoted left or right. So we went in all directions. But I have to have a direction for my project. I can't move randomly the way our ancestors did. So I've got directionality out of Africa through Eurasia into North America, and finally ending up at the tip of South America, basically following one major ancient dispersal route or corridor.
Right. And so there is, I assume, evidence that people walked that incredible distance.
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, over a span of maybe 50 to 60,000 years or 2,500 generations, yes, they did. Nobody walked this in one whack. nobody... crazy as I am to do this. So, I'm basically compressing what is that, 500 centuries into one big long walk.
Yeah, and presumably, it just strikes me now that those people didn't set out with an aim in mind. They were probably just migrating to where perhaps they thought there might be more food or the climate might be better.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, even the word migrating is a bit deceptive, because it implies, you know, consciously moving from point A to point B. You know, scientists will get picky and they'll say, you can't call it migration, you call it dispersal, because we don't have intentionality. We don't have a waypoint, a GPS place to go to. We're just kind of moving with the landscape, following the hollow in our bellies, if you will. So we even move backwards, of course. There's evidence that ancient humans migrated back into Africa at some point in time.
Now, you've been a journalist for many years and you've been traveling all over the world as a journalist. You call this particular exercise slow journalism. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, slow journalism is basically a contrived word for old-fashioned in-depth writing and photography and reporting and recording. What used to be called immersive, right? You know, where you immerse yourself. You don't just kind of fly into a place and kind of spend 2 or 3 days gathering up a bunch of information and then fly back to your home base and produce a story. You spend time inside the story. You spend time with the people whose lives are making up that story. And walking does this very nicely, right? Because you're moving at about 5 kilometers an hour. That's the average pace of a modern adult. And so you're moving just fast enough to kind of see the landscape and the human story change very kind of slowly. But you're not settled in one place where, you know, after a while, like when you go to a new city and it's all brand new at the beginning and like its scales fall from your eyes. But if you stay there weeks or months or years, it starts seeming too familiar. Walking kind of walks that line between the old and the new very nicely.
And is it the practice that in every new country you have walking partners to travel with you?
Yeah, every new country and indeed every new, you know, valley sometimes. It's pretty impossible to predict. I mean, put yourself in my shoes, if you will. Like you're walking through, say, northern India. A couple years ago, I walked for 17 months for more than 4,000 kilometers across northern India, west to east. And, you know, it's hard to find a person in northern India who has the luxury of that time or the inclination to walk that huge distance. You know, I'll find people online or through word of mouth or recommendations from other colleagues who might be able to walk with me for like 2 weeks or maybe even a couple months. And I walked with 9 people across that stretch. And they are essential to this project, Sean. They're absolutely crucial because it's not just my journey. It's a collective journey. And their stories get woven in with this kind of braid of storytelling going forward.
So it's actually not about how much you're traveling to, as I understand it, to the extent that you're not saying you're not setting yourself a target every day. It might be just a couple of kilometers because you've encountered lots of interesting things on that particular day.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes readers, are a little confused saying, are you doing this to set a Guinness Book World of Record? Are you kind of a survivalist? Are you kind of the guy who eats bugs, on TV? And no, I don't have anything against eating bugs. They're actually very protein rich, but I'm doing this as kind of a mental exercise as much as a physical one. It's a narrative journey. It's about getting off of our phones, getting our heads a little bit out of the digital age, at least for a while, off that spinning merry-go-round that's getting faster and faster, and cramming our heads with input, with data, with bite that we can't even process anymore, and getting out and just using your body as the main vehicle for absorbing and processing information. The way we have as a species for 99% of our existence, for the 300,000 years Homo sapiens have existed, this is how we've processed our information at 5 kilometers an hour.
Have you encountered many other people walking? I mean, apart from your walking partners, but people who just, for the course of their day, have to walk from point A to point B?
There are literally billions of micro-migrations going on these days. And I'll call them migrations because now we have intentionality. We've invented destinations. But, a commuter going to work on the tube or on the metro is doing a micro-migration. A woman who's going out to her fields to work in the morning and come back home is doing a micro-migration. And interestingly, we're doing the same pattern of migrations that we've done since the Stone Age, since we're hunter and gatherers. Rarely a straight line, Sean, it's a circle. Because 60,000 years ago, we left a shelter under a rock or under a tree and walked, 5 to 7 to 8 kilometers a day, foraging for plants, hunting for food. But we came back to that rock and tree, a circle. We do that when we go to work today. That is before the pandemic.
Yes, well, we'll get to that in a minute. But I also assume then that in choosing your routes, you're avoiding highways and that kind of thing. You're choosing routes where they're smaller and you might see other people walking.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. Because again, highways are fantastic for machines. They are designed, built for machines with wheels. They are not designed for human beings. They're not designed for sinew and muscle. And not only are they hard to walk on with, jarring your joints and making you feel extra tired at the end of the day, they're psychologically difficult. They're heavy. You're walking through sound waves of loud engine noise, exhaust. You're getting blasted by, air, hot air in the wake of big trucks. It's an unpleasant route to walk. I pick sideways, alleyways, farm roads, even walking across wilderness sometimes.
Now, and you did say that, the people who did this thousands of years ago would have avoided things like glaciers. What kind of things have you had to avoid now in the modern era?
Well, my version of a kilometer wall of ice, a glacier, is a modern political border. Political borders, these invisible and tangible barriers, become very hard when you don't have a visa, and they serve the same sort of purpose as an obstacle. I had to walk around literally some countries because I could not get a visa to go through. And on the one hand, that would be frustrating and disappointing. But on the other, it's all part of the experience. And these kind of deviations from a proposed route have actually opened up whole new parts of the world that I have never imagined and were extraordinarily rich. I walked through the Caucasus, for example, because I couldn't get a visa to walk through Iran. And the Caucasus were an extraordinarily complex mosaic of human experience, human culture, that was way off my psychic map. And I spent months there. It was a very rich experience.
And when countries wouldn't give you a visa, Paul, did they give a reason why? Wasn't you were, you're an American and I'm just walking to Argentina and the Iranian said, yeah, sure you are.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure that was what's going through the bureaucrat's mind in Tehran. But, the countries that don't give you visas often don't tell you why they don't give you a visa. And in fact, you don't know. They never say no. They just don't answer.
Ah, right, yeah. And are you still in Myanmar?
No, I have just left and am in China preparing for the Chinese leg of the route, which is going to be extremely long and extraordinarily amazing. It's going to be about 5,500 kilometers long from south to north, going through some remarkable landscapes, human and natural.
That's extraordinary. But in Myanmar, things had to be paused, as I understand it, but it was predominantly because of COVID rather than the coup.
Yeah, the coup was kind of the final sort of heartbreaking complication. I had paused the walk in northern Myanmar in a big city called Mandalay. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic broke out, I was planning to stop to write a book about my journey. And then the pandemic erupted and it clamped down all the borders. And I'd been basically, waiting for those borders and travel restrictions to lift when the coup erupted. Myanmar was one of those unplanned stops, and our ancestors had them too, of course. I was reading that, I don't know if you remember from your school years, there was this land bridge between Eurasia and North America called Beringia, across what is today the Bering Straits. People were stranded there for 10,000 years waiting for that to thaw out before they walked over that land bridge. A few months in Myanmar is rather small potatoes.
It's just a minor inconvenience by a comparison. Were you in Mandalay and was there much evidence of the coup there?
Yeah, actually, I was in Yangon because I had to go to Yangon to work on a visa. So yes, I experienced this just heart cracking, very sad, very tragic backward step for that country, which had just been kind of slowly consolidating its kind of return to civil rule when this happened.
Now, you've been doing it for the past 8 years. When roughly do you think you might get to Argentina?
Yeah, a lot of people are asking me that, including some of my editors. The original plan had been a 7-year walk, and here I am 8 years in, and I'm not even like quite halfway. So let's just say, I would say another 5 or 6 years maybe. And why a bit shorter is because there's going to be a ship passage across the North Pacific that'll be thousands of kilometers long that will get done fairly quickly, right? Get done maybe 10 days on a cargo ship. I'll probably be walking around the deck of the cargo ship, but I won't be walking those thousands of kilometers.
And how are you holding up physically? I imagine walking every day for 8 years takes its toll.
Yes, you would think so as well. But, one thing, I'm kind of blessed with genetics. I don't have any claim to kind of being, super fit. I come from pretty cranky old DNA from people in the northern Appalachians of America. But I think walking, when you think about it, it's great for cardio. And as long as you're kind of reasonably fit, and especially if you're not carrying too much weight, and I've learned to pare down my weight a lot on my rucksack, it keeps you healthy. And again, I think about it again. It's what our bodies are designed to do. Evolutionarily, we've been, been walking. The human experience has been one on foot for, again, 90%+ of our existence on this planet. What you and I are doing right now, assuming you're sitting down, I am, is what's unnatural and unhealthy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. Paul, we wish you well for the rest of your journey. What an extraordinary adventure and experience of the world, really. Paul Salopek, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. Great to chat.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.